Welcome back to Two Bar Stools and a Knife, where we talk about the then, now, and the future of the hospitality industry from the FIU Chaplain School of Hospitality and Tourism Management, and of course, the Bacardi Center of Excellence. I'm Professor Brian Connors, joined, of course, by the fabulous Chef John Noble Bassey, and sitting in for Nathan U.D. Dodge, our good friend, Chef Jeremy Houghton. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing awesome. How are you, sir?
All the enthusiasm's coming out. Chef Houghton, how are things with you, sir?
Fantastic. It's been a couple of days since I've had the pleasure of joining. Usually I'm filling in for you, so it's nice to actually fill
in. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to be the first to say, God, it's really nice without Dodge here.
I was going to say, it's going to be nice and peaceful. We can have a gentleman's conversation. We don't need some, loudmouth going off about something.
Well, so Professor Dodge is on special assignment right now as we speak as the Sazerac. Yes, he's in New Orleans doing deep research in New Orleans at the Sazerac and a few other places that he is. But I'm really excited about today's show, guys, because I almost introduced myself as Chef Brian Connors, because today is going to be all about us putting on our chef gear and having some fun. And, this is the one time Chef Houghton and our guest that we're going to be talking about, we get to gang up on our good friend John Noble Massey, because he is the only CIA grad on the podcast today. The only one. All the rest of us.
And I don't hold that against either of you three. We will just roll right along. But you did notice that I'm super excited about today's guest.
Yes.
And definitely. When we have had culinary, there has been a noted dominance of spirits and a liquid refreshment. And it's nice to have a chef here.
Absolutely. And we've had some hard hitters, so we got a great hard hitter today as well. So before we get going with today's guest, let's talk a little bit about the Bacardi Center of Excellence. We got some great stuff coming up. Our summer courses are getting ready to launch this season coming up. Chef Houghton, we know you got a chock full spirits class coming up, as well as Professor Dodge, another great spirits class coming up in the fall. For those of you that didn't get a chance to take Gabe Rutia's class, he's also got another fabulous class coming up. And again, beverage law. We're going to be offering beverage law this fall with Valerie Harper, a phenomenal teacher. She's going to be fantastic. But lots and lots of good stuff coming up. And we're also getting excited about the South Beach Food and Wine Festival that's right around the corner for us. So all sorts of good things going on. And the last thing I want to do, a quick update for the Bacardi Center of Excellence. Hey, check us out, because we're teaming up with the Tasting Panel Magazine for a industry-driven webinar series called Back to Spirit School. So our good friend Uncle Lars Light and myself and other members of the Bacardi Center of Excellence will be hosting this. And the first one is going to be on May 27th. May 27th is going to be our Back to Spirit School with the Tastings panel. And of course, our good friends from Bacardi North America and Team Enterprise will be joining us. You'll be hearing more about that. You'll see it on our social media clicks, but we're really excited about that. So without further ado, let's do a quick little introduction. So friend of the institution, a friend of South Florida, well-known chef. He's freezing his took us off today in Chicago. But Chef Jeff McGinnis is joining us from restaurant fame, as well as one of my favorite little spots down in the marina that I hang out in, Stiltsville and some other stuff. So, Jeff, welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Hey, guys. Great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great to have you here, man. And thank you for calling in from Chicago. And Chef Houghton, full disclosure, he's in Providence today, so he's a little chilly. So it's all well and good. But let's get this started. Chef Houghton, I'll throw it over to you, sir.
Absolutely, Chef McGinnis. It's been a while. We had a drink not too long ago, I think. And wanted to just get a little bit of background on your story. I know you're from Florida. You went to school in, I think, Charleston, and now you're a restaurateur. So give us a little background on your career up to now.
Oh, gosh.
Just a little. You don't have to go too
long. Yeah, I'll try to give you the three-minute resume, I guess. And so I was born and raised in a rural area of the panhandle of Florida. I call it the Redneck Riviera, Destin, Fort Walton Beach area. It's, back then, waterfront property was affordable and normal. People could live close to the ocean. So I grew up fishing and cooking in kitchens. I started at the age of, I think I was 14 when I got my first job at a restaurant, and, washing dishes and cleaning squid and cutting fish. And I think I didn't, a lot of people will tell you, oh yeah, I had a passion for food when I came out of the womb, and my mom was an amazing cook, and it was, it was kind of opposite for me. I was very poor and I needed to make a buck, and I washed dishes just to be able to have some money to buy weed and whatever I needed when I was in high school. And as I moved along, I found myself actually falling in love with the industry and the very rough, rugged pirate ship style mentality of the kitchen world. And whenever I turned 18, I didn't do a great job in high school. I would skip out on school all the time to go surfing or what have you. So I decided, I'm pretty good at cooking, and I think I like this, and it's a fast paced environment, and what the heck, let me give it a shot. So I wound up in Charleston, South Carolina at Johnson & Wales University back in, this was 1996. So half your classmates that are listening to this, the staff probably wasn't born then. And loved it. Charleston was one of the best. I couldn't have picked a better city to move to. And since then and during then, it's just become a really amazing culinary mecca for the States. And I did, I think I did about 7 years there, wound up in the Virgin Islands, cooking. I wound up in San Francisco cooking, eventually moved, to Virginia, to a rural area, running a restaurant, outside of Charlottesville, Virginia. So a lot of Southern, influence at that time in my life. In San Francisco, did a lot of Japanese food. And then wound up in Miami shortly after. I think I was in my mid-30s, worked for the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company for many years and got to do a task force, group with those guys. So I got to go to Turkey, to Istanbul, Turkey, to Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, to the Bahamas, and open new concepts kind of as a mercenary, if you will, for one of the bigger, hotel chains in the world. And I loved it. It was a very fast paced, a very organized company. So it grounded me. It taught me a lot, with organization and how to work in a brigade system and bring people up, and got to open a lot of concepts with them. And, at some point jumped off, with them and was able to open a little restaurant in Midtown Miami called Gigi's. Gigi's was a fast paced Asian, concept that was open very late. Met my wife there, and then opened a place called Yardbird in Miami, and held on to that for a while. I wound up selling my shares to that about 5 years later, which gave me enough money to start opening some of my own places. And from there, I opened a concept with my wife, our first concept of Root and Bone in New York City, which we still operate. That was about 8 years ago. So we're still, fighting the good fight to keep a restaurant open in New York, which is a whole nother ball of wax. From there, we've opened several concepts down in Miami. Right now we have Stiltsville Fish Bar, on the beach in Miami. We have Meatalia, which is, down in South Miami, past Coral Gables area. We have a Root and Bone down there. We have a version of a Root and Bone. It's a Roots Coastal Kitchen in, Puerto Rico in the El Yunque rainforest. We have, I'm actually in Indiana. I was in Chicago, but I have a little pizza joint here in, outside of Valparaiso, Indiana. We've got a Root and Bone in Indianapolis, which I'm driving to tomorrow. And, it's a whirlwind and, a bit of a, we've created quite the mess of restaurants spread out everywhere to operate. But, it's been a wild ride. That's, I think that was more than a 3 minute resume. Sorry.
No, but that was very impressive. And I think our students love to hear, all the way back from, you surfing and all the way up and working just to make ends meet all the way up to where you are today and owning all the, these restaurants. It's a true inspiration. And that's really what our students love to hear about.
Well, I don't want to defame the comments there, but I'm still trying to make ends meet, to be honest. You don't get into this career to become a millionaire and hopefully not to, be on Food Network. If you're in this career and you're going to try to do it, it is to make ends meet and because you're passionate about it, because, it's a different world, what you see on TV with Bobby Flay and those guys who are millionaires, but there's not, the restaurateur world, especially over the past year, has not been producing any cash for any of us.
It's certainly been challenging, but I know, Chef, I'd love to hear that you started out the way you did, washing pots. So that's the way I started out. And it was great to have one of your mentors, Chef Van Aken, on last week or the week before, where he was talking about tarring roofs and washing dishes.
He was also talking about falling out of windows with Jimmy Buffett, but that's a different story altogether.
But we're thrilled to get that story out of him. So my question, obviously, your experience on Top Chef. I have been a Top Chef fan. If you could share two things, one, what are your greatest memories from that show? And then number two, a story that may rival Chef Van Aken's falling out the window with Jimmy Buffett story.
Top Chef was great. God, it's been a long time. I was on one of the first season five, so I don't know what they're on, 723 now, I think. What I remember of Top Chef, because I'm so old, it's like asking you about your favorite times in high school. But I do have some great memories. And just like high school, I made so many friends on Top Chef, and I keep up with them now still today. And, you know, there's a lot of camaraderie, and, you know, we share stories and we still see each other at events. And I loved it. It was a lot of fun. One of my favorite memories probably was one of my worst memories was getting kicked off. And then suddenly a couple weeks later, they said, "Hey, we're going to do a competition where you guys fight to get back on." And we all competed to get back on, and it was in New Orleans. So I think my season was New York, and then they did the finale in New Orleans, and I get kicked off and missed two shows, and then got to compete to get back on. And I won to get back on, and it was Emerald Lagasse was the judge that day. And I'll never forget, you know, going on and seeing him and working on a couple dishes and him coming up and like really studying what I was doing. And of course I'm shaking, like, this fucking Emerald Goss, he's watching me and what I'm doing and asking me questions. And of course, every time I give an answer, I'm like, oh, I bet I'm saying the wrong thing. And in the end, he like, I won the challenge. And to do that with a guy like that, and then and have him like say really good things about you, and you know, even if it was saying bad things about technique and everything, you know, I remember Grant Atkins like talking about some of the techniques I did, some of the techniques I did wrong. John George talking about some of the techniques I did right and wrong, and just to have the entourage of amazing world best chefs talking about you and your food, you know, even if they're saying something bad. But it was really great when they said something good. But, you know, it's just mind-blowing. Like, wow, they noticed that I, you know, toasted my spices and ground them, and it made the difference in the aromatics of the flavor of this stuff. And it's like when somebody, you know, lights you up and says something that like that to you, even if it's wrong, but especially when it's right, it's just like, wow, you know what? This is all paying off. I have purpose. I did something good. That was probably my favorite episode. And then crazy stories. I remember when we finished the episode, the final episode. I got kicked off again on the final. I didn't win. I got to cook in the finale, but I didn't win the last episode. I remember at the end, we all went out and partied, and it was like Tom Colicchio and Padma kind of let their guard down because we were finally done. And, you know, they couldn't pick favorites prior because there was judging and stuff. But right after the last episode, we all partied together and had drinks together and high fived and got hammered drunk until 5 a.m. So that was great to hang out with that crew and do that in the middle of the French quarters of New Orleans until 5 a.m. That was probably my favorite memory as well. Awesome. I don't know
one
if it competes with
about this business, right? So hanging out with people and breaking bread.
Yeah. It wasn't Jimmy Buffett jumping out of a window, but it was still,
you always remember those nights, you know, when you're with this special group of people. And, you know, I remember that stuff even with like the late Roger Verger, you know, and, you know, just crazy stuff like that. You're like, you gotta be kidding me. So gang, let me bring it back to industry. You know, Jeff, you had a couple of interesting little tidbits when we were talking about, and yes, the hospitality industry, but more importantly, the restaurant segment is getting incredibly hard hit. We were having a little sidebar conversation about labor, and I'd love to talk to you guys about that as well. But, you know, Jeff, you brought up something real interesting, you know, that you're not going to big cities. And it sounds like your strategy is to go to, and pardon the term, but, you know, it's the term we use in real estate, secondary markets.
Yeah, second tier.
Which is, I think, a brilliant move on your part. And love to hear some of your ideas and insights. And then we'll kind of do, I'd love to, for all of us to talk a little about the labor challenges that we're having too. But so what's your strategy right now with these kind of second tier markets that are out there?
I think that, I'll tell you my strategy and how I've wound up in these second tier markets. And you know, I guess I'll get to your question. It'll sound like I'm going around it, but you never know who you're talking to. You never know who you're presenting to. You never know who you're feeding. You never know who that next customer is walking through the door. And you need to treat every single customer and every single person, not just customer, but the lady at the grocery store, that, you know, you need to treat everybody with respect and respect them like they're your next best friend or boss.
Amen. And, amen.
And I learned that because I didn't do that sometimes. I learned that because I was a hothead in the kitchen. I learned that because I was, you know, throwing saute pans, and I learned that the hard way. And the moment that I came around and wasn't the Gordon Ramsay of my kitchen, it was more of a soft-handed mentor, and started playing my cards a different way, is when life really changed for me on a lot of levels. And, you know, I don't need to get political or religious with you, but, you know, it changed me. And I guess something changed probably when I was in my early 30s, and I saw my career and my life change because of it. And, you know, let me give you one example. It's a story about, I had opened a restaurant called Gigi's, and it was in Midtown. And I don't know if you guys remember it, but it was very hot when it opened, and we stayed open until like 5 a.m. and it was a nightclub next door. And we did these Asian steamed buns. It was very David Chang, very Mama Fuku like. And, you know, Miami had never seen a scene like that, never seen a restaurant like that. And I had met this guy, Amir Ben Zion, who was Michelle Bernstein's partner at the time. And, he wanted to do this sushi concept. And I said, hey, man, I really want to do this concept. You know, check out what David Chang's doing. I want to do a version of that, but Southern with fried chicken. And so we took off running, and man, we blew up. It was such a great concept. And I remember the opening week, I was grumpy. I was rugged, just working 16, 17 hours, 7 days straight, barely holding on. And it was the first time that I kind of was a bit of an owner of my own place, and just really the pressure was coming down on me. And a server came up to me and said, hey, there's a girl out there. She's in culinary school. She's sitting at table 34, and she really wants to say hi. She wants to ask you about this dish. She thinks it's just amazing. And I said, I'm too effing busy. Leave me alone. Can't you see all the tickets? I can't do it. So, you know, that was that. About 4 hours later, 5 hours later, it must have been 3 a.m. Same server comes back, says the same thing. Hey, you're not going to believe this. This girl loved her food so much, she's back again. She went out and hung out with her friends and brought them all here to eat this dish. You should go say hi. She really wants to ask you about this dish. And I said the same thing. I said, I'm too busy. Leave me alone. About 30 minutes later, this gorgeous woman is walking out the front door, and the server comes up behind me and she says, hey, asshole, that's the girl you keep blowing off. This girl's beautiful. So I sprint to the front door. I grab the front door. I say, ma'am, I am so sorry. It's not usually like me to be like this. I'm just under a lot of pressure. I hear you've been in twice tonight. I hear you like the food. I hear you're in culinary school. And she smiled at me. And it was this dish that she was eating. It was meatloaf, actually, which is on almost every restaurant I have right now. It's on the menu, a version of it. And I'm talking to her about this dish, and she's like, you know, I sure would like the recipe. And I said, well, you can't have the recipe unless you come in and work for me. I will teach you the recipe tomorrow if you come in and work. She came in and staged for 2 days. She liked the place so much that she wound up working with me. And the poor girl's Australian, so she didn't actually have a work visa. And we wound up working together for a number of years, and now we're married and own five restaurants together and have three children. So it was one of those moments where, you know, I guess God put her back in front of me enough times until I didn't say the right things. but it ain't always like that. You know, the reason that I'm in these second tier markets is because, the reason I'm sitting here in Indiana right now, in Portage, Indiana, is because a guy came into my restaurant, he sat down, he ate, I forgot what it was, but something was wrong with the dish. And I was, you know, chef back there running expo. And, you know, the server, I think, rang it in wrong and then did something wrong again. So I'm like, oh my God. So I just ran the food out myself, apologized, fixed the issue, you know, came back to check up on them. And they were just blown away. Like, what do you do? You're the chef. You're out here, you know, bringing us this the dish or whatever. And, you know, it was a couple of mistakes that was at a table, but just going out there and learning from my mistakes and admitting your mistakes and treating the guy like as if it was your father, or your mother, or your, you know, your mentor, or whatever, to anybody and everybody, paid off. Because, you know, that guy later that night was leaving. I wound up asking him to sit down and have a beer with me, and he did. And it turned out he's in the oil business and outside of Chicago. And now we have two restaurants together up here, and we're going to be opening a third one. And it wasn't because I created the best food in the world. It wasn't because of, you know, me showing off, or he didn't even know I was on Top Chef. He didn't know any of that. It was just the way that I guess I've humbled myself enough to approach people and give them the best service I can. Even if I'm not a server in the front of the house, you know, and that's how I wound up with these. And I can tell you more stories like that. You know, Yardbird was the same for me, which, you know, we wound up winning 4 James Beards with that concept. And it was a similar thing. I wound up cooking for the guy that had the money and he had the backing, and just impressing him. Not necessarily, I mean, it helps when the food's really good. That's a start, but backing it up with more than just being a good cook and being a true person and fixing a guest's problems. You know, it's too many times I go into my own restaurants and I see the chef back there and he's a nightmare. He's on his 17th straight shift without a day off, and him blowing up and not getting anywhere with not only his staff, but the customers. You know, I truly believe that you put love and dedication into the food that you come out on the other end so much better than anything else. And it's paid off for me. And, you know, I didn't intentionally say, hey, I want to open in a second or third tier city. Not that I guess Indianapolis is probably a first or second tier, but it just organically has happened. And, you know, I think that it wasn't necessarily my plan. It was just, maybe it was God's plan, you know?
I think gents too, for Chef Massey and Chef Houghton here, you guys got some great stuff there for your classes. Have you heard what Chef was saying? That's some pretty good stuff.
That was amazing. And I think it's awesome because, you know, it's the perseverance. It's more than the food, just like you said. And I think that is what our students need to hear, that, you know, you can be the best chef in the entire world, but, you know, you have to have the people skills. You have to have, you know, the
math. Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, you have to have the whole package to do what you've done.
And, you know, 10 or 20, well, probably 20 years ago, a chef was just a chef. And today it's like, they want you to do charity events. You need to answer the phone. You need to talk to PR. You need to be oh my God, I am a human resource manager times 20 at every single one of my stores, you know? And God forbid you have one of those guys like me that shares your cell phone number with all your staff. You know, you hear about the drama, but, you know, you try not to get too engaged into it. You try not to latch on too much because people come and people go, but I've never burnt a bridge since I was 18 years old. I have never walked out on a shift. I have never not at least given a 3-week notice. A 2-week notice, by the way, guys, a 3-week notice. And on that last week, if you need to do part-time at one place or the other, and that is something that is not happening anymore. And let me tell you, as a young cook, if you want to make it in this industry, don't burn a bridge. Give proper reference. You want to switch it up. You want to go to another restaurant, try something out. Guess what? 9 times out of 10, that second place isn't going to be the place you're going to work forever. I mean, it's not. You're young and you're going to be switching jobs. I mean, I've switched my job. God, I've probably had 25 jobs in the past, you know, maybe not that many. I've probably had 15 jobs in the past 20 something years. And you know how I wouldn't have half the opportunities I have if I burnt bridges with people. And Miami is a small town. And I tell you, what's a smaller town is New York, because these towns, we all we all live and breathe and die by the knife. And it's like, if you're burning your bridges left and right and you're not doing right by the people that have been paying you, then where are we going to get to? And right now the industry is so bad, so bad, that if you're one of those shining guys that at least shows up, you might not be the best cook in the world, but if you show up every day with a smile and you walk in and you shake everyone's hand in there, that's your teammate, and you give them that attitude, you will bring that restaurant probably further along than any badass chef that's got an attitude coming in tenfold. I've turned down so many resumes with people that have this, they've worked all these amazing places. And then I see a kid that's like, I've been working at the Cheesecake Factory for 3 years. You've been working there for 3 years? Yes, sir. I can start in 2 weeks. Versus a guy that's like, I've been working for Daniel Blue, this and that, and I can start tomorrow because F them. I don't even take those guys anymore, because you know what? They're going to do that to you 3 weeks later. They're going to do that to you.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a different time, you know?
So. It is. And that kind of leads us into our next question. And, you know, JWU in North Miami is closing. And right now we're seeing the void of chefs and culinarians in front of the house and servers and bartenders down there. What do you think impact that's going to have onto the Miami scene? Not just Johnson & Wales closing, but just this post-COVID, everybody looking for work all across the United States. And you know, our food service business isn't rebounding, I think, like we all thought it would.
Right. Right. Yeah. I went to school in Johnson & Wales in Charleston. Mm-hmm. And that was 1996. I think they closed, 2010. I'm not sure what year they closed. I think it's going to be catastrophically bad. I think that, you know, we're already in a situation right now where we're not even able to find educated cooks. You know, we've taken, I'll take Stiltsville Fish Bar in South Miami as an example. Because I spend a little more time there than I do the other places, but we've taken food runners who have at least been in the kitchen, who have seen the dishes going out. We're taking dishwashers, and hey, that's fine. I mean, that's how I was brought up, and we're having way better luck bringing people like that up and just teaching them from garmage to fry up to grill and then saute. You know, we've got a girl that's never cooked before, who's been a food runner for 2 years now, who is one of the better line cooks we have. You know, a year ago this happened, and the girl's name was Zulie. I'll never forget her. She had never cooked a day in her life. A year and a half later, she was my lead sous chef, just because it's so hard to find people. A and B, you know, when you water a flower, when we grow somebody and you teach them everything, again, it goes back to the loyalty and the worth ethic. That stuff just goes so much further. A lot of my restaurants, no offense, I don't need everybody's input and, I know how to cook this, or look, I see this in a cookbook, I want to cook that. Like, that's great. Don't get me wrong, there's a time and a place for that. But, you know, right now, teaching from the ground up is what we've had to do. And this culinary school leaving is, I think it's the worst. I think it's really terrible. You know, I know FIU is trying to step up their game and build their culinary department, and there are a lot of offshoots and stuff. But I mean, we even saw an issue after Cordon Bleu closed. What was that, 2 or 3 years ago? My wife actually went there, and yeah, I don't know. I'm scared. I don't know about you guys. Do you guys agree?
Definitely. We certainly see it as an opportunity, Chef. We certainly see it as an opportunity, and we have plenty of internal discussions, because we're a hospitality school first and foremost. But the students get some really solid experience in the kitchen, and we're trying to figure out, is there an alternative to what the traditional culinary schools have been? And if there is, then what is it, and how can we deliver that effectively? Because I still think that there's passion for culinary. I think there's obviously a need. The question is, for us, is the 2-year programs that are currently out there gone by the wayside?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. If you guys want to start a program where you shift them in 2 or 3 month semesters, between all of my restaurants, I promise that they will learn. I won't charge them.
Shep, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, your friends, our friends, friends of the program, Michelle Bernstein, we had the first conversation about this. Chef Van Aken a couple of weeks back that Chef Massey said, you know, we're looking at this model a little differently, you know, where students can't leave, you know, with this huge, enormous debt, number one, but also as, and I think all of us agree that there is value in education. That will never change. But also now restaurant as apprenticeship programs is really also something that Chef Massey and I are very passionate about. I know we've had Chef Houghton talking about this, but just what you just said, Jeff, is like, hey, you know what? Come with us for a few weeks and then you go to, okay, Stiltsville. Then you go to Root and Bone. That's a new model that we're going to take a deeper dive into.
Well, sign me up. Sign me up.
Love that.
I'll make sure they're not. I'll make sure they're not making tuna salad or anything like that. I mean, my internship sucks.
Yeah.
I can make sure that they're getting an education. Yeah. I mean, I would partner with Michelle or Norman and make sure that, hey, I'm going to make sure to cover the stocks and sauces. You guys make sure to cover the butchery and what have you, you know?
Yep. Okay. That's exactly what John and I just both lit up with. Yes. That's a great idea. So let's follow up on that. But before we follow up on that, let's get a little bit of fun. What do you think, guys? Is that time?
It is all right. Time.
That's time. Let's cue the music up. All right. So, Jeff, you know, you've been pre-warned. This is called our speed rail. Now, I did customize this one a little bit. The gents also take part in this, so we're going to have a little bit of fun here. But it's also like the this and that. You know, I like to take a deep dive on individuals of their likes, dislikes. You know, Jeff, you and I have a few mutual friends, so, of course, I had to ask you of them as well. Might have been somebody this morning. You never know. So, again, let's start it out with an easy one. And let's start out with Jeff here. But so, dim sum or sushi? What's it going to be? Dim sum or sushi?
I'd go dim sum.
Okay. I'm down with that. Chef John Noble Massey, where are you going with that one, sir?
I absolutely agree with Chef. Sushi is fairly ubiquitous. Toss out my doctoral word there.
That but was dim a big sum, word. I don't think Nathan would have known what that word
Nathan would just not have known. Nathan would not know that word.
He would have asked Siri for that one.
Okay.
All right, Chef Houghton, what's going to be dim sum or sushi? And you can put in crudo. You can put in whatever your little heart desires there.
Absolutely dim sum. I think you got more variety, and I think it's spot on.
All right, perfect. All right, let's go to the wine world here. And Chef Houghton, I'm going back to you. So, Jeff, we know you like to drink a little wine like the rest of us. Chef Houghton and I are both sommeliers, which comes in pretty handy sometimes. But Cliff Notes version here, Jeremy, Cliff Notes. Top wine experience. Tough, I know, but top wine experience.
Top wine experience was Germany. I had a 1972 bottle of ice wine, and this was probably in 2008. And it did not taste the greatest, but the fact that I was in Germany drinking an ice wine that was that old, I can't say as old as me because that wouldn't work, but it was pretty damn nice.
All right, I'm down with that. All right, Chef John Noble Massey, Cliff Notes wine experience.
Grand Central Terminal, New York, Michael Jordan's, great steak in front of me, by myself, asked the thoughtful bartender, hey, what do you recommend? I want more than a glass. He recommended a half bottle of Quintessa. And
beautiful.
My favorite blend since then.
I love that one. All right. So, Jeff, no pressure on here. Cliff Notes version, wine experience.
Yeah. Gosh. So I've done the Quintessa tour twice now. I think it's the coolest tour, but I can't pick that.
They're awesome.
I love Napa. God, I can't wait to get back out there. But what one that stands out, I took my wife for her birthday to 11 Madison a long time ago, and turned out one of the servers / sommeliers that night was an old friend, somebody I'd worked with. And again, didn't burn a bridge. And it, see, this is where it pays off, you know. And they come out and they're like, Jeff, Janine, oh my gosh, you're here. I'm going to pair every course for you, and did a pairing. And I remember we dove in for the first several courses into this Alsatian white category. And it was just all these, back then, I think I was like, I like white wine, but I love red wine. And I remember flipping that day and being like, oh my God, Like I didn't know the depth and the different variety, all the differences in everything. I mean, it went from sparkly to this deep earthy thing. So I think that was a big time in my wine moments.
I love that one. I love that one. You know, and I'm going to add a little bit to this. I had one last week, boys. You know, Jeff and I are both recently in the Bahamas, different programs, different boats and so forth. But I was over jamming to the Bahamas and I had this one of those wonderful experiences. We were on a small private island in the Azumas, sitting under a dilapidated, falling down little shelter, eating stone crab that I'm cracking right there underneath this thing with rosé, a mustard sauce, and good friends. And we were looking around at this beautiful pool they call the Azumas in the Bahamas. And my buddy Furby, a couple of you guys know Jonathan Furby, we're both like, this doesn't get it. Actually, what we say goes, this doesn't suck. I mean, it was just one of those amazing, great things. Wow. So with that in mind, and Jeff, we're going to go back to you on this one. Would you rather boating or surfing? What's going to be?
I grew up surfing, and as I've gotten older, I'm not as good at it. But definitely surfing. I'm a Florida native and grew up actually at a young age. My brother and I, we competed on the ESA, Eastern Surfing Association. And, there was a time where I could really ride, and I don't know if that time is anymore. But
all right. So the answer is boating. Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. I love them both.
You got it. Jeremy Houghton. I've never seen you surf in my life, my friend.
Never once, but I'll Brian will get this joke, jet ski.
Oh, Christ. All right, good. Perfect on that one. Don't ask.
Don't ask.
All right, you got it. John Noble Massey, I don't know where you're going with this one. You're up in Lake George.
Well, the one time I went surfing was actually happened to be in Fiji. I was on the board for all of 5 seconds, so I am happy to take lessons from Chef. If not, I'll be voting.
Perfect.
There you go.
And I know we can answer that one for Nathan as well. So let's travel to Charleston real quick. All right, boys, put your Charleston place on there. You know, Chef, you did some time there in Sullivan's Island. I'm sure you've had some great cocktails at Dunleavy's Bar and Grill. Dunleavy, an old friend of mine from Block Island. But what's going to be your go-to, must-go-to spot in Charleston, South Carolina? Jeff, back to you.
Oh, God.
Must. You're swinging through. You got to stop.
There's always Husk. There's always Charleston Place. There's always all these big hitters. But if you haven't checked out North King, small place, Butcher and B, really special and unique. It, actually, my roommate in college wound up opening that place, and I couldn't be more proud of Michael Shimtop was his name. Yep. And I think he's traveled, taking it to Nashville and a bunch of other places now. But that's a really cool. They got this little brewery thing. They got a little compound up there. They're doing a lot.
That's awesome. All right, Chef Jeremy Houghton, where are you going to go in Charleston? You got a must-go-to spot?
Husk. It's got to go to Husk.
Okay. Husk. That's legit. No one can spread. All right. Chef John Noble Massey, how about you when you go to Charleston next time?
You know, the last time I was in Charleston was when I was working on a cruise ship, and it was a one-day stop. And I remember that I was out, and that was about it. So I have no recollection.
Okay. All right. That works for me. I'm going to throw a good one out there for you guys. Taco Boy, you know, sometimes you just got to go to Taco Boy, you know, it's good stuff up there, but there's just so much good stuff up there. And the last of the Speed Rail Foodie Edition is going to be a pizza question. All right. Pizza question. So let's go to our CIA grad. All right. Our Italian American professional up there in the corner there, John Noble Massey. What's it going to be? New Haven style pizza, New York style pizza, or Chicago style pizza? What's it going to be?
Oh, well, you know, any pizza is good. Well, almost any pizza. There is good pizza down here in South Florida. You know, I'm a traditionalist and I love New York style pizza, but if I had my druthers, a little Frank and Pepe's.
Yeah, brother.
Really delicious, and it blends some of your world with my world, and I'm happy about that.
I like that a lot, too. All right, Jeremy Houghton, you're up in that neck of the woods. Where are you going? New York, New Haven, Chicago?
I'm going right to Chicago, my friend.
Really?
Yeah, one of my best memories is for Chicago Food Show and sitting there getting deep dish. So, yeah.
I didn't see that one coming. That's good. Jeff, the last question for you. You're going to New Haven, New York, or Chicago for pizza?
So I had a really good New Haven experience a while back and hit hit several places there. And it was, you know, I just thought it was so unique in the, you know, the cold versus everything. I'm going to have to say New Haven on this. If I had to order something right now, it'd be that, because I'm craving it. I haven't had that style in so long.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you, being a Connecticut native. My wife's a Connecticut native. She grew up right outside of New Haven. She's a Yale grad, so I'm going right there, either Modern or Pepe's, and we're in good shape. But, guys, this has been an amazing show. Jeff, some amazing insights. You're going to be showing up in a lot of classes via this. Love to get you on campus when you're down here in South Florida, when you're not traveling throughout the U.S. trying to get your restaurants back open, though. But, John Noble Massey, any closing thoughts?
I'm going to remind everybody there is still time to sign up for volunteering at the South Beach Wine and Food Fest.
Thank you.
And so look forward to our summer classes starting next week. And I'll look forward to seeing Chef McGinnis at the Best of the Best event.
Ah, yes. I like that one. I like that one. All right. Chef Jeremy Houghton. Any closing thoughts, sir? And thank you for stepping in today.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. I know I'm much better looking than Nathan, so it's okay. So, definitely the South Beach Food and Wine Festival. I think a big shout out there, just like Chef McGinnis was saying, it's all about connections. And, you know, go volunteer, help out, because you're going to meet these amazing chefs, and you never know where it's going to lead to. So cheers.
Absolutely.
Yes. Ask to help me. I asked for several volunteers. I'll take them all.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're going to be good hands if you're working with Chef John Noble Massey. Jeff, any closing thoughts for our students, for our industry professionals? Any words of wisdom?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I think I gave it my all on this one. Yeah, just never burn a bridge. Never burn a bridge. And, you know, being a polite gentleman or lady in the kitchen goes very far. Yeah, take it easy on us old timers that are still trying to run these restaurants. It's been quite a ride.
That's great, man. Some great insights today. And of course, if you need any further information on the Bacardi Center of Excellence, feel free to reach out to me at bconners@fiu.edu. And as a closing thought, gentlemen, I'd like to say one more time, it has been an absolute pleasure without Nathan Eugene Dodge here.
Here, I second.
All right. Yeah, cheers, guys. Cheers to your Dodge. Thank you. Jeff, thank you, brother. We'll see you guys soon. And thank you.
Take care, guys.
Great show. Thanks, Jeff.